Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 92 for October 22nd, 2009. Bree Pettis and MakerBot.
This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much.
It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software. I shouldn't say it like that. Libre and open source software. Mr. Randall Schwartz is here. He's Merlin from Stonehenge. But that doesn't mean has a big beard. It's just his handle on Twitter, M-E-R-L-Y-N. Hello, Mr. Merlin.
Hey, long time no talk. I missed last week's show.
Where were you? What were you doing? We had Jono in.
I was at AstroCon. AstroCon is the open source, the conference put on by Digium for the open source software called Asterisk. Remember we had Mark Spencer on. Almost a couple year ago. And I was invited by friends of mine from the VoIP users conference. They insisted that I go to the show because there'd be people doing open source there that I could talk to for this show, which I thought was really great. They did interview me, though. So if you want to hear an interview I did while I was in Phoenix last week, if you go to vuc.me, they pronounce that Vuck Me very carefully.
Okay. So
vuc.me. If you go there, I'm like the first posting in there now. And if you listen to the show a month or two from now, you'll probably have to scroll down a little bit. There's a little interview with me there of what we saw there.
You talked to the Vuckners, the little Vuckners.
Yes. Don't replace that with Vaynerchuk.
That's okay. Really
also, from my walking around talking to people, I finally got to meet Allison Smith, who does the voice for Asterisk, which is really cool. So she was speaking out, and I would like, oh, that sounds just like the Asterisk thing. That was really cool. But I got four guests that will be on upcoming shows. We're going to space them out probably every 6 weeks or so. So it's going to be a telephony subject on this show about every 6 weeks or so from the people I met at this conference. So some people did really remarkable things in open source telephony. I mean, when you think about it, it's, you know, the idea of communication with voice is everywhere.
Yeah.
And yet it is transparent in that sense. And so these guys have taken on some incredible ways of using open source software to do some really incredible things. So anyway, we're going to get them on the show. Also, in the last week or two, I was interviewed by the Linux Outlaws at linuxoutlaws.com. A nice hour and a half long interview of all sorts of things open source. Talk about a little about Floss Weekly and how we produce it behind the scenes, as if there's any production. But anyway, yeah, we produce it behind the scenes and all that stuff. So you want to listen to that. That's on linuxoutlaws.com. It's /podcast/117. But if you just go to linuxoutlaws.com, you'll probably find it. Or just Google for Linux Outlaws. And then the thing I'm most excited about and most scared about all at the same time, Leo, you were just at TED, right?
TEDx. Yeah.
Okay, one of the extended. It's
a franchise. Yeah, they're great pains to say this isn't TED.
Yes.
It's TEDx.
There's this other sort of TED light that's out there called Ignite. Have you heard of Ignite?
Yeah, you going to Ignite?
I got invited to speak at the Portland Ignite.
That is very flattering. That's exciting.
The way this works, there's only 20 people picked, so it's a really small audience. A lot of people applied, only 20 people picked.
Congratulations.
And my talk, would you believe it, is on karaoke for fun and profit.
Of course it is. Where's the profit part? I'm curious about that.
You'll have to listen to the thing when it comes out. So that's on that's live on November 19th. I think they're putting the videos on like the week or two following. If you go to igniteportland.org, I think it is, or just Google for Ignite Portland, you'll see the list of the other people there, the actual cool people that I'm on stage with. So that's really nice. They got all these cool people. And then me. That's really nice. And after I was accepted for Ignite Portland, Ignite Salem, which is being put on the week before, wrote me and said, come on, we need some more submissions. Can you do the same talk here the week before? I said, oh, good, rehearsal. What a great deal. So I'm actually doing the same talk. Well, I don't know. I'm probably going to get accepted because they invited me. But so I'd be really able to do the same talk 2 weeks in a row. So it'll be interesting. But to do a talk where the slides automatically advance every 15 seconds for 5 minutes, like a lightning talk, it's going to be interesting. and free pizza. So there's the best part of it.
See, so do you do the slides? I've been very curious about these. They do slides.
I produce the slides.
And then they just kind of start firing them, and you got to keep up.
That's right. And it's actually all sequenced. The entire day is sequenced. There's a 15-minute break between each of the talks, and the talks are exactly 5 minutes
long. So they just
long.
Begin. You better be there. Exactly. Your talk's going to begin.
You have to line up and backstage and be ready to go and on stage and no prep time.
Oh, it's like a sporting event.
It's going to be a little weird. I've never done anything like it before. I've always controlled my own slides. Now, and also the bad part is that I found out I'm on this thing, right? And it's November 19th, but they want the slides frozen by November 1st. And I'm like, oh, that's only a week away. Ah! I've been working on these things, and I'm working on my day job and everything and all that too. So it's just crazy.
But so my suggestion, one word per slide. That way you don't get rushed.
And maybe not necessarily related to what I'm actually talking about, but just something that evolves. Yeah. I've thought about that too.
Yeah. It's a fun way to do it. I've actually always wanted to do a presentation that way.
Wow.
I saw one guy who did one per second. It was just like boom, bada, 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 bada. But then it's, you know, maybe that's just flashy and.
I think I'm probably going to have like some pictures of famous singers and stuff behind me or something. I don't know. I'll find something to be correlated. But I think actually part of my proposal was, and I may even sing. So I may have to actually sing a little bit too, which would be sort of weird. Mm. I'm at least going to do the current voice at least once. You know it's going to be in there somewhere. So
can people just go to that? How do they get into that?
I believe it's free. I believe it's a free event. If you go to Google for Ignite Portland, it's at the Baghdad Theater, which also is a brew pub and pizza place. And they said you're allowed to have a beer runner. So I have to bring up one of my friends to go fetch beer for me while I'm waiting to get ready to something. Maybe right afterwards.
Probably beer runner. Better time. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's
so I'm excited because I did, you know, I submitted the idea. I was actually sort of nudged into it by just to try it. And then, to be honest, I submitted one about Floss Weekly because I thought,
neat.
Floss Weekly. I one of the presenters actually wrote me behind the scenes. I guess it's kind of public though, but wrote me behind the scenes and said, you know, Floss Weekly probably will get rejected because it's too self-promoting.
Right.
You want these things to be something that other people can get a benefit.
No promotion. Yeah.
And in fact, I think the letter said something effective. I've seen you on stage. You need to do something that's more your style.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that's
your style. I don't think there's anybody else going to do that.
I submitted two of them, and it's funny because I got the rejection letter. I went, I got rejected. But they submitted one rejection letter for my rejection one win letter for the success one.
Good.
So it was cool. Very cool. So, I'm excited about it. It's coming right up. So if I feel stressed about it or you see me on Twitter going, I was still working on my slides. It's the last minute. Now you'll know what it's about.
Do not be stressed. In fact, relax. Take a deep breath because today we are headed to the future. Imagine if you would, a world where you could have a printer on your desk that would print any physical object you needed.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It would be very cool. I could print all sorts of things. I could print an iPhone, right?
You could print an iPhone.
When this already jailbroken. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be like a switch, jailbroken or not. You know, that
cool,
kind of thing.
Leo.
Yeah.
Where is this future, Leo?
Well, it's right here. It's the MakerBot. Well, it's the first step in that direction anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you got this, Greg. I'm really excited. Bree Pettis. The name is so familiar. I'm trying to remember where I've known Bree from. Let's bring him on via Skype from beautiful downtown. You're in downtown Burbank, and Bree is in beautiful downtown San Francisco, where it's a lovely day. Hello, Bree.
Hello, good. I'm here.
Yay!
Good.
Bree set up a mixer and everything. Very professional. Sounds great too.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds nice.
Yeah, we don't mess around. We've got it. You know, when you've got equipment, you might as well use it.
Well, you're a maker.
Yep. I make things. That's what I do.
I think I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I think that's the natural human thing is to make things. It's like that's what we do. That's what humans do. Not just Bree Pettis. That's what humans do, isn't it?
That's if they're not, they probably should be, in my opinion.
Yeah. I remember talking to an older man when I was younger, and he said, well, what do you do with your hands? I said, well, nothing. You know, I'm a man of the brain. He said, well, everybody has to do something with their hands. You ought to be doing something with your hands. So maybe he was right. I mean, maybe that's what I ought to be doing. So tell us about MakerBot Industries.
Right, so I make now I make not just make things, but I make things that make things.
Ooh,
wow, cool!
So So how meta is that?
Yeah.
MakerBot is a machine that you can buy. It comes as a kit. You put it together and it makes things for you. So it's a 3D printer, and it builds things up layer by layer by layer.
Now, so a 3D printer, that's taking some sort of plan, some digital format of something I want to, that only exists in the virtual world to begin with, and then you're layering it like just vertical layers on top of each other then?
Yeah, so the process, the way it starts is it starts either as a digital design that you make in a CAD program, or you can download things. You can download like any sort of objects. We have an object sharing website called Thingiverse.com where people share digital designs. So you can design it or download it. And then you take it and you put it in a program called SkeenForge, which is open source, and it slices it up into little 1/3 of an inch layers, and then it makes a tool path for the machine. And then it just builds it up layer. It draws it out in plastic, and then it goes up a little bit and draws again until it's got your whole object.
So your resolution there's only 1/3 of an inch for each of the layers then?
It's accurate to less than 1/10 of a millimeter, but it's, yeah, the layer height is a third of an inch. A third of a millimeter. Hello. Oh.
Now, I've seen
the... 1/3 of an inch would be horrible. That would be really...
That's pretty chunky, actually.
I've seen printers that print, that use spools of plastic to, you know, create 3D things, and I've seen cornstarch ones. What material does MakerBot use?
We use all of that. It's ABS. My favorite is ABS filament right now.
Right.
And it's the same stuff that Lego's made out of. So it's really, really durable and strong. You can actually make things and use them as parts when you make it with a MakerBot.
Oh, that's neat.
We also have HDPE, which is the material that your milk jug is made out of. There's some shrinking issues with that, but it's super, got a great friction coefficient. So if you need like bearings or something, that works really well. And then we're prototyping a material called PLA, which is polylactic acid, which is what that is it's clear. And it's, if you've ever seen those like recyclable plastic cups, it's that stuff. It's actually made out of corn from Nebraska. So it's really cool.
So it's good stuff. It's Archer Daniels Midland. Cool. Because I have somebody did a 3D model of me, a bust of me out of cornstarch. It's starting to flake off, though.
You know, if you upload that design to Thingiverse, like hundreds of people around the world will make that design.
There you go, Leo.
Oh, I'm famous.
Have you wanted a little 100 clones there's a guy of you named and various Unfold. Things? Lego, indestructible Lego would be good, yes.
There's a guy named Unfold, and he uploaded his face to Thingiverse, and I think he's probably the most replicated 3D human being out there. His face has been downloaded and printed out hundreds of times.
That's kind of neat. So, if people make stuff, is Thingiverse usually the place that they end up posting this?
Yeah, I mean, we looked around for a place where we could share our digital design files. Actually, this is before MakerBot, when we got a laser cutter, and we couldn't find any, so we had to make one. It's kind of like YouTube or Blip.tv or Vimeo, except instead of uploading video files, people upload digital designs.
And then if you have a MakerBot, you could make them?
Yeah.
Like there's,
and
there's
that actually brings up, so you talked about a laser cutter. Now, the old way to make 3D things was to cut away from something that was larger, right?
Yeah, that's called the subtractive process, and CNCs and Dremel type gantry routers do that kind of thing where they drill something away, and so you have to start out with a block and then you end up with the object and a lot of waste as well. Additive, which is what we're doing, additive manufacturing with the 3D printer, builds it up layer by layer. So you only use the material that you need, and it's kind of like a super hot glue gun. It's kind of like the way a calculator is to a computer. It's like a hot glue gun to a MakerBot.
Oh, man. I'm analogy overload. I don't think I can.
Is this an IQ test? I didn't realize I had to prep for this thing. Come on.
How expensive is something like this? Is this an expensive hobby?
Well, the cool thing is that up until this point, 3D printers have been in like academic institutions or elite corporations, and they cost anywhere between like $50,000 and $500,000.
Right.
And like it's kind of like the mainframe days of computing. And this is the first one out there for under $1,000. It's $750 for the basic kit.
Wow.
And $950 for the deluxe.
Wow. And yeah. And then I have to buy filament and stuff like that, but that's probably not that expensive.
Yeah, we actually sell filament, but we send some of it with your kit. You get a starter set of filament, and it's interesting. Like, we sell it for $10 a pound or $12 a pound for the black. We just have black and white now. We're going to do colors next year, but it's compared to other, like, if you get the expensive machines, use the like ink cartridge model, and we're not doing that.
That's where they make more money that way. Yeah. So what software do people typically use? They use Blender? I'm sorry. Did you have something to say?
I did, but I was just going to ask. You said this can make things that are durable. Is it up to the point now where it can make itself?
That's a good question. We actually grew out of the RepRap project. The RepRap project is a project to make a self-replicating rapid prototyper. And it's an awesome project. We're totally into it. And technically in that world, a MakerBot is what's called a rep strap, which is a bootstrapping rep wrap, because we can a MakerBot can print out all the parts that you need for a rep wrap, actually. And but we don't replicate everything, but we do have parts of it. We have four parts on this machine, and we keep adding more with as we go along. We have to make them on other machines for the machines. And we actually just did a whole thing where if you have a MakerBot and you want to make these parts for us, we'll pay you for them. So then you make MakerBot parts on your MakerBot for other MakerBots.
Wow. That sounds cool. Yeah. It's like a farmer getting a seedling stock and going off and making a farm and then selling additional farm things, whatever. I'm not much of a farmer. I'm a city kid. Sorry. It's something like that. Leo can explain better, I'm sure.
So I was going to ask, what software people use? I presume you need some sort of 3D CAD software to design it first, right?
Yes and no. There's a whole group of people. There's a guy called the Mass Retriever is his handle, and a bunch of guys in Vienna who are actually doing parametric objects, where they're doing they're programming objects where they like the physical object is never modeled. It's just programmed and outputs an STL. So like really cool boxes that fit in together. And then they made Legos that are parametric. So you can say like, I want a 14 by 17 bump Lego and it'll do it. So you don't need to have, I mean, if you're an obsessive programmer and you can figure out how to just program objects, go for it. But
and STL is the language that MakerBot understands.
Oh yeah. So an STL file is kind of like the text file of 3D printing.
Okay.
So you can use any CAD program you like. You can use Google SketchUp, even though it's a little bit of a hack to get it into an STL file, but it's totally doable. I like to use SketchUp, which is free for Google. It's not open source, but it's free. And then I also like Blender. And there's a lot of people who like a lot of other ones, but they're not free and they're not open. So we're not really committed to those kind of solutions.
Like AutoCAD and stuff like that.
Yeah. They cost a lot of money. They actually cost more than the machine. So
yeah. Like, yeah.
We believe really strongly that bits and information should be free and atoms should cost money. So that's how we work, being an open source company and sharing all of the data around the MakerBot. And then we sell kits.
So I just opened Mr. Potato Head's ear.
Right.
Well, I'm just curious what the STL file actually looks like. You could read it in a text. Actually, I'm trying to open it. You could read it as a text file.
Let's see.
Or is it just binary? No, it's binary.
Yeah, STL. I haven't opened it up. Open it up. See what you see.
It's just a binary file.
Okay. There's the inner part of the ear right there.
There's the ear right here. Yeah.
Like down a little bit further. It's the outer part of the ear. And then there's the ear canal. I can see it. I don't know why you guys can't see it.
Yeah. That's pretty clear what that is.
You know, I seem to remember that there's two kinds of STL files. There's binary and then there's a not binary one. And I think the binary one is significantly
smaller. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Well, I'll look for some text-based ones.
The 0 and 1 are smaller than A and B.
Look for a giant one. There's SLDPRT, That might be a like a printer file, like that goes to the MakerBot.
Someone in the chat room says it looks like Klingon.
Yeah. Well, let me open this with TextMate, see what I get. No, that's not. Well, kind of, sort of. There's kind of some text kind of stuff there. It's intermixed.
But the cool thing is we take that STL file and then we slice it and we actually make a G-code. And G-code is like the simplest ever. It's literally XYZ coordinates and speed. So, and then there's a
That's
few
all you really need, field. Right? I mean, you know, go there, do this.
And so that's what it does. And it's really, it's a really cool little program, SkeenForge. And it slices in and then it shows you the toolpath and you can see what each layer is going to look like. And it's actually a bunch of people who, there's a pretty decent sized community of people who are designing objects who don't have 3D printers. And then they're uploading them and then people make them.
Oh, that's neat.
It's pretty cool.
So who made the MakerBot?
So my friends Adam Mayer, who's got serious software kung fu, and Zach Smith, who is got serious, he's just a machine in general and takes on everything he can get his hands on. But he's done a lot of web development stuff as well. And me, we basically, we started on January 17th, and we literally hunkered down with two cases of ramen. And
the programmer's a staple.
And 2 months later, like ramen is not healthy. Like,
no.
Don't do that. It's no. actually not, like
it's all
like,
salt.
It's salt and fat. Actually,
salt and fat. Yeah,
and
a little noodle to hold it together.
Yeah. So, and then 2 months later, we had basically gotten the design together.
That's
with
fast.
The whole design and
had you ever done anything like this before?
Yeah, we've been working on the RepRap project for the past couple of years in our spare time, and we just finally decided to quit our jobs and
kick some butt
in the 3D printing world.
Awesome, Bree. What was your job?
So I've had a couple jobs. I spent a lot of years as a school teacher. I used to teach in Seattle Public Schools. And then I did, I've done like 200 videos on the internet. A lot of them I did for Make Magazine, where I made things every week and then had to make a video about it.
You're quite famous for that.
Some of them are kind of absurd, like making hovercrafts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I worked for Etsy for a year and then quit that to do MakerBot.
That's full-time. Where I met you, at Etsy.
Oh,
okay. That's where I know you from, is Etsy, I think. I know that. I knew your name.
So yeah, we all, it's nice, we're a really awesome team. Adam, Zach, and I, we all, like, in some ways we can all do everything, but then we all have our special kung fu where we bring in, you know, our skills to bear.
Is anybody using these in schools? Because I mean, you were a teacher, this seems like it'd be so cool for a school.
Yeah, it's actually, that's one of my favorite things. I just had one of my students that I used to have, who I had in middle school, and he emailed me to tell me he's starting a FIRST robotics team. If you know about FIRST, it's this really cool high school robotics thing. And he said what are they going to do? They're going to get a MakerBot, but they're going to do the case their own way. So they're going to make a custom case. And he was just like, it's so cool that I had you as a teacher, and now, like, you make robots.
You make robots that make robots.
Yeah.
That's so cute. That's so
neat. What's the maximum size of something that can be made with this?
That's a really common question. It's 4 inches by 4 inches by 6 inches tall.
Hmm. But it could be a part for something larger, too.
Yeah, and you can actually make interlocking parts if you want. Like, we have a guy who's making glasses frames, and he makes like one side of the glasses, and then he makes the other side of the glasses, and then he makes the sides, and then he glues it all together.
Yeah, that's how
you. Could you make a strong enough like a tongue and groove between the two of them that they could just slide together and stay together, or is the accuracy not that accurate?
No, it's accurate enough. There's a bunch of people who've been playing around with making things that snap together and go together.
Wow, cool.
What are the tolerances?
So it's accurate to less than a tenth of a millimeter.
Oh, that's good.
And then the layer height is 0.375 of a millimeter. So, and one of the cool things is like we sold 350. We have to ship 100 on Tuesday, but there's 250 people who have them, and they're hardcore in some of them are really hardcore into it, and they're like, we have some people who are really pushing it, and they're getting the layer height down much lower. And then it requires, it's kind of like making a hot rod in that way. They're taking something like, you know, a Honda and slapping a bunch of stuff into and at tweaking the parameters and machining some of their own parts to make some serious serious improvements. And then it's all GPL, so they'll share it out to the group, and if it makes sense, we're going to go ahead and make it better based on what they do.
Now, that does bring up a good point. What part of this is open source? Obviously, there's the control software for the machine. Is that primarily what you're talking about?
No, everything. Like, we put up the CAD files for our laser cut files. We put up the electronic schematics as well as the Eagle board design files. We put up all of the software is up there. We had a guy, this is really cool. There's something called PID, which is math. And right now with our temperature, we want to keep it at 220 degrees Celsius, and we had it so it bounced between like 215 and 225, and it would just go in there, and when it got hot, it would cool down, and that kind of really easy switch on and off. Well, somebody who does PID, which is it's math, he basically does it for other things, and he just jacked that part out of the code and put in his own code, which was like super accurate, so it just nails at the temperature now. And sent it to us, and that's in the latest release.
Oh, that's neat.
So it's like open source. Like, if you're in a company that is not doing everything open source, like, you're doing it wrong. Do open source.
Yeah. What benefit you get out of it?
You find a lot of sympathetic ears here on this show for that, definitely. How do you share that software? Is it, do you have like a giant SVN repository, or is it ad hoc, or you're all?
Yeah, we've got it in SVN, and it's on Thingiverse, and we're trying to get it centralized. We're just playing with GitHub right now, so we're just getting it out any which way we can. But right now we have svn.makerbot.com. You can go and check out all it. If you go to svn.makerbot.com, you probably don't want to download the things that are in our trunk, because that's all our experience. I mean, if you want to build the things that don't work yet, you can. Let us know how that works for you.
But actually, you could. I mean, this stuff is controlling physical hardware, so you could have bad code that actually makes things blow up, right?
Nothing would blow up, but you might get a little bit frustrated.
Well, certainly you could melt something.
No explosions.
I mean, I know a lot about explosions, and could you do it? And I can't think of a way to do it. And I would know how to do it. But it does get hot, so it's kind of like a hot glue gun. You could touch it and burn yourself. That's about as dangerous as it gets. Don't do it.
I probably shouldn't ask it. Well, I'll ask anyway. Could you make a sharp edge that obviously wouldn't show up on a metal detector?
Hey, what's wrong with you? What are you, some sort of weird terrorist type?
There's a really interesting project that came up at the hackerspace camp in the Dutch hackerspace camp this last summer. A bunch of guys used a RepRap, which is like a MakerBot, and there were police there, and they took a picture of the handcuff key, and then they remade it, and they talked the police into letting them try it out, and sure enough, it worked. And so if you really needed a handcuff key, that was plastic, you could keep one in your, you know, pocket, I guess. I heard that in Florida that's illegal though. So somebody had a handcuff key around their neck and then got arrested and then used it to get out, and they got in trouble.
But on the other hand, if you want to carry a gun in Florida, be my guest. Yeah. No handcuff keys.
So could you make a working pair of scissors, though? I mean, could you, like, snap two pieces together and actually cut paper with the edge of the plastic? I'm just trying to see the boundaries of this.
Oh, you know what? Nobody's tried that yet. And that's one of the cool things is, like, it actually wouldn't work straight out of the bot. You'd have to sand it down, but it does sand down. Or you could, like, maybe put razor. You could make it so it accepted razor blades, and then it would be, like, that would be really cool looking, actually. And the cool thing is that we're in this wonderful frontier time where if you want to make a pair of scissors and be the person who designs the open source 3D printable scissors, like, you can be that person.
It'd be really cool to go all the way from a video scan of your hand so you can get the right measurements and then build the right hand grip for a custom pair of scissors.
Yeah, we're actually kind of excited. We have some friends Dan and Andy Berry are visiting in New York right now. I wish I could be there. They're visiting. They're really obsessed with 3D scanning, and we want to put out an open source 3D scanner for like the kind of washer dryer combo of replication, being able to put something in one box and push a button and have it arrive in the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing that. They're working on that. They've been working on that, and they're sharing their work with us this week.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, especially if you get that down to something cheap, because I know 3D scanners aren't very cheap right now, right?
There's one that's $3,000 that I would love to have, but to me, that's a little bit out of my range. Like, if I can buy a used car for the price of... Yeah, I want a 3D scan. We're probably going to go with something closer to like a laser scanner with a laser and a webcam. So it should be like laser levels are $5 and webcams are, you probably already have one. So the hard part is going to be the software with that, actually.
Sure, sure. Wow. Amazing stuff. Somebody in the chat room asked about something called Walkotron. Was that something you've worked on?
Walkotron. Oh, yeah. So that's the Beatles had this machine that they used where they made they took tape loops and they made a keyboard out of it so that they could record things and play with a keyboard. And I did that with a Walkman. That was a while ago. I don't see that in the thing here.
It went by a while ago. Cool. And so what was your association with Make Magazine? Did you actually work for Make Magazine to produce these videos, or was just independent, one of the people that likes to contribute?
Yeah, you know, I started off, I was an early video blogger in 2004, 2005. And it was early 2004 when I was making videos. And then in 2005, I was like, I'm going to focus. I'm just going to make videos about people who make things and the things that I make. That's all I'm going to do. And I did a few videos, and PT was in Seattle at the time, and he just called me up and he said, can I put these on our site? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so then I was like, okay, let's make videos. And I just cranked out a bunch of videos until they paid me. And then that was just the way, and it was really fun. Cool. Setting yourself up to do something every week, like, you know, you've got it kind of dialed here with the interview, but I had to actually make something. I had to come up with a project idea and make something that I had usually never made before. And then by the end of the week, have a video about making that thing and a PDF that showed people how to make it. And
That's hard work. That's tough.
Oh, I know.
Talk about a deadline.
I actually can totally relate, because I used to do a monthly column, actually three different monthly columns for three different magazines. And I was always coming up with some Perl code or Smalltalk code or something.
Right,
and
right.
I had to come up with something clever every month for each of the columns. So I completely relate to what you had to do every week, but not at the pressure of a week. So, yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it would take 35 hours. Sometimes it would take 80 hours a week. So it was one of those things where I did it for 2 years and I was like, this has been great and I'm going to take a little break.
Yeah, it gets to be a little bit of a strain. And I know that for a while when I was doing three, it was just insane. Just way too crazy. I'd run out of ideas real quick, and I'd go screaming at the last minute, going, I got a deadline, I got to come up with something to do. So, yeah, I totally relate to that.
But the cool thing is Make Magazine is shining a spotlight on people who are making things and that, like, is such a powerful force in the world. So if you don't read their blog every day, you should. And you should subscribe to the magazine, because it's a great magazine. It's inspiring.
I know, because so many of us live in the world that other people create for us, and it's kind of nice to move out of that.
Do you go to the Maker Fairs?
Yeah, we actually brought a bunch of MakerBots to the last Maker Fair, and it was out of control. I mean, it was, if you haven't been to one of these things, you got to go. Basically, like, I think it's something like 60 or 70,000 people come through in a weekend, and... Oh man, it's just like, if you are into making things, you're basically in heaven at Maker Faire.
Yeah,
it's
amazing how many people go to that. It's just amazing.
We brought machines and we just printed out and gave things away all weekend. It was really fun.
Yeah, when we had Tim O'Reilly on, he talked about how this little Make magazine didn't think it was going to go very far, and then it was printing out hundreds of thousands of copies, and was like, wow, good timing on that.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I've noticed about the maker community, though, is it's really cross-cultural, and it's also, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're young or old or whatever. Are you finding the same thing with MakerBot? Is it that kind of cross-cultural, cross-interest, young and old alike?
Yeah, I mean, we've got it's so great. Like, first of all, cross-cultural, like half the machines we ship leave the country. And we've got them on every continent now, but except Antarctica. So if you know of anybody who is going to Antarctica, tell them they should get a MakerBot. So that's really cool. So we've just got so many different people from around the world participating. And then also just all ages. We've got kids making them. We've got people making them with friends. We've got people making them as hobbies. We've got people making them to do other things with them. We had NASA get one. A bunch of people from Google have gotten them. We shipped a bunch to the MIT dorms. It's so cool to see people, you know, get the tools of manufacturing, which have before this basically been, you know, in industrial places or now China for the most part. And like that now they get that on their desktop in their living room.
Wow. And I was just thinking about this. I don't have to actually have one of these machines to cooperate in the community. I mean, you're probably also looking for artists to draw and people to come up with ideas. Like my idea for, you know, scissors that custom made to a hand. If I said that in some forum or chat room about MakerBot, maybe somebody else could run with the second part of that and go, oh, that's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. And then go off and do it and ship me one, you know, or whatever. That'd be kind of cool.
I mean, we've set up Thingiverse to be really like Creative Commons and open source compliant. So basically, if somebody has uploaded it with Creative Commons or open source license, you can click I made one and you can upload a picture of your copy, or you can make a derivative. So you can go ahead and download it, make changes to it, and then re-upload your changes. So if you make a really crappy pair of scissors, somebody else might be like, okay, he's doing it wrong. Let's do this right.
Open source design too.
Yeah. Incredible. And they'll make it work.
Wow. What's the software written in? C?
Yeah. There's a bunch of Java in there as well for the actual replicator G. Replicator G is what tells goes from the computer to the MakerBot.
Wow.
One of the exciting things is we just got it so that it runs off SD cards. So we were having some issues with comms between the computer and the machine because we're running over a USB to TTL cable, which is like 9600 baud. And things stack up and it gets we were having a few like what we call warts where it has to wait to catch up. And so it makes a little blob. And we just fixed that by, you know, we had an SD card on there because we wanted to be future compatible. And we finally got the code up there that basically, so you can upload a design to the SD card and then run it from the SD card on the machine. And I think at that point you can even unplug it from the computer and it just runs from an SD card on the motherboard and to the rest of the machine. And it makes it really good.
How did you get into open source? Is this something you've been playing with for a long time?
I mean, for me, it actually came out of education and needing to have tools that were affordable and that I could share with my students. And also being somebody who is obsessively, I believe in the power of information, I just wanted to be free. That's been part of who I am for a long time. And so with open source, the idea of it's just such great infrastructure for being able to say, I give this away. If you use this, please leave my, you know, you can use it and you can even change it, but you have to re-give it back to the community with your modifications. I mean, that's just such a wonderful future for innovation and possibilities. I mean, for anybody who's doing innovation in a black box, like get out of the black box and share what you're doing, because there's a lot of people out there who have spare cycles right now who are willing to, you know, be a part of really cool projects and rock it. So,
well, this is part of the reason that we had short cycles on patents and short cycles originally on copyrights, was to make sure that the information at least had some chance of being commercially viable before it then be contributed to the body of knowledge.
Yeah.
Now, are you someone that says that, I don't want to push you on the spot necessarily here, but are you arguing even against copyright, even against any IP at all?
I'm in favor of like trademarks because I just don't want it to be confusing, but that doesn't like, Like, I wouldn't, it would kind of, like, if you want to make a bunch of MakerBots, go for it. But if you want to make them and sell them, and you're using part, and they were subpar, and they had my MakerBot's name on it, that would be kind of a bummer. So, but besides that, like, go for it. Like, I think copyright, I mean, it kind of depends on which world you live in. If you're in the old world, copyright works and all that kind of stuff. If you're in the new world, where you should be, like, you want to share everything so that, one, people know about it, and two, people can do really awesome things with it. So, I mean, I'm basically kind of, I don't know exactly if what the, where it is with, like, you know, who's, what kind of open source person is I am, but I, like, fall on, like, I want to be as open as possible with everything so that we can push the world forward in a positive way and make a difference together and share things.
That's a great position to take, and I hope it all works out for you, because I know there's, like you said, there's a lot of old world stuff still going on where we have to have the copyrights in order to make a living under the old school of thought. So interesting that that you're pushing for moving forward. I love
well,
it.
And you're walking the walk. I mean, you haven't, yeah, you've let this all, is it Creative Commons licensed?
Oh, no, it's all GPL.
It's just GPL,
so,
okay.
Here's an interesting example that happened to us. Well, I told you about the idea of, so one of the things that has been interesting is we put all the designs up there, and some people actually download them and make them and buy stuff. They don't buy it from us, they make it themselves. It takes them a few months to source it, and they run into a bunch of, if they don't get what we have, they run into some challenges and they have to rebuy stuff and stuff. But those hardcore people who are hard doing it themselves, they end up like coming up with really cool hacks and doing things in a little bit different way that we maybe didn't think about. And so really the people who are, you know, who are taking all of our information, if you want to put it that way, of course, we're giving it to them very happily, but they're taking it and using it, and then they share it back with the community, all this innovation. So really the people who are not buying from us and who are doing it themselves are actually, they end up being the people who give the most back to the community. And that's the best. So that's awesome.
Cool. So where do you see this going in the future? More accuracy, cheaper, all the above, more materials?
I see a reduction in like mass consumerism, where so instead of having to go to the store to something, it'll
don't
be,
buy, build.
It'll actually be easier for you to either design it or download it and just print it out. So, I mean, already if you need like measuring spoons and measuring cups, like you
just
don't have
print
it's
them.
Faster to print them than to buy them.
Oh
it's
my
much
God, that's
cheaper,
hysterical. Wow. Is it kinder to the natural resources? Not really, still.
Yeah, I mean, when you buy something, it's very likely made in China.
True.
And then put on a ship,
yeah,
and then,
yeah,
and then put on a truck, and then with this, it's like, I mean, I guess there's a little bit of energy from the internet, but basically you're downloading it and it's in your house and there's no shipping. And because it's additive, it's not like creating lots of waste. Eventually we want to have a recycler. So that, like, you take all your old MakerBot objects and you put them in some sort of a contraption that then re-puts out, you know, you can make other objects from the objects.
Is there anything permanent that changes in the chemical as it's being printed?
Nope.
So it's just changing form. And so if you had a way to melt it back into the long, thin string, you'd be okay, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, this is incredible.
It's the replicator from the Star Trek.
It's almost, except I wouldn't want to eat it. It's, unless they put food in there somewhere.
Hey, this is just the beginning. We're just beginning. Soon food, we'll be making food this way.
Right.
Yeah. And we're kind of getting into Diamond Age stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's made of people.
Speaking of food, we're in the final stages of prototyping a Frostruder, which is a frosting extruder, which is, basically, instead of extruding plastic, it extrudes frosting. So we've already done this, and we've already.
You are making food. You're making cake.
Yes.
Nobody should ever have to frost a cupcake by hand ever again.
Then you can print all those things that end up in Cake Rex. Have you seen CakeRex.com? It's incredible.
Yeah.
What's that?
Leo, you don't want to see it because it'll be another distraction for your day.
Is it going to make me hungry?
No, CakeRex.com is a great blog that has pictures of all these awful cake decorations. They're Alden wrongs, misspelled words, all sorts of things. So it's incredibly fun. It's one of my distractions, one of my guilty pleasures. I was going to ask, is there anything, can you make anything that's flexible, that's you don't print in two parts, or is this really rigid always?
It's really rigid, but with the Frostruder, one thing we're excited about is instead of putting frosting in there, we can put anything that's smushy. So we're going to do silicone and a bunch of other things. There's the guys who are doing Fab at Home, which is another open source 3D printer project out of Cornell. Mm-hmm. They've been doing a ton of extruding building, and so we're going to. They've been doing some really cool stuff, and we're pushing that forward. We've actually it's pneumatic, so when you use it, it goes it extrudes and it goes, which is extremely a satisfying sound.
And what's the most unusual thing that's been printed so far?
My favorite thing that's been printed so far just happened last week. A guy who goes by the handle Finflood in Philadelphia was going to Iceland with his sweetie. And I guess he realized at the last second that he wanted to ask her something really important on the trip. And so he actually rushed over to his hackerspace, Hive 76 in Philly, and printed out an engagement ring on the MakerBot there. And she said yes. So, MakerBot love.
Wow. It can print anything. Anything 3D. That's really cool. If people want to participate, what are the kinds of things that that they should know to participate? It sounds like if they're good at 3D drawing, there's places to work. If they want to actually buy one of these, is there a way to find out where there are machines locally? Do you have like a registry of I've got a MakerBot and I like to share it with people, that kind of thing?
What we've got right now, if you're into it, you can join the Google group. You just search MakerBot and it's in there. And I think it's groups.google/MakerBot. And right now there, if you're looking for one locally, I would just ask the group. There's a few on our wiki, which is wiki.makerbot.com. We've got a bunch of a page for communities where people are putting together communities and kind of like MakerBot user groups so that they can get together and share information and strategies and kind of like a hot rod group meets. These folks meet and talk about how all the kind of hacks that they can do on the machine. And so you could connect that way.
If you can't afford one yourself, you could always just get together with a dozen other people and each pay $100 and get something like this then.
And we've really reached out to the hacker and tinkering community. So if there's a hacker space in your town, I know there's one at Noise Bridge. I know there's there's one at Hive 76. There's one at, if there isn't one in your hacker space, in your city, let me know and because I want to give them a hookup so they can get one.
But we just lost Cube Space in Portland, so unfortunately, I don't remember seeing one there. But Cube Space is no longer, which really sucks.
So you've got to start another one.
We're working on it. It's Portland's a big open source community, so we're really trying hard to get things to happen there. So, anything else you want to tell our listening audience before we have to let you go?
So, basically, if you join our Google group, check out the site. If you're a designer, design things and share them. We need more awesome designs in the world that are free and open. And if you want to get one, go ahead and get one. We just sold out of batch 8, and batch 9 will go up in the next couple days, and you'll be able to get one. And they're selling fast, so if you're thinking about getting one, you should just get one. Because we keep trying to, we're scaling up, and we keep building more, and people keep buying them all. So get yours soon.
One last question for the chat room. Has anybody printed up board games with this?
Yes. There's some game, I think it's called Settlers of Catan, that people have printed out. Or maybe it's Carcassonne, one of those games that is like a board game.
You could print out Carcassonne because it's just squares and little markers.
Yeah. And then people have made lots of chess pieces. There's actually a couple of different chess pieces.
Oh, that'd be kind of fun.
Yes. Cool.
That'd be really fun. I can make a Randall Schwartz knight.
Yeah, I really think you should get the STL file for your face and upload it to Thingiverse.
I'm going to.
There we go, yeah. A king.
It doesn't really look like me. That's the problem. If it looked more, can you hand me that, Colleen, the bust in my cabinet? I'll show you. It's made out of cornstarch, but this is with one of those commercial, $20,000 commercial printers. So, I mean, it was like in a college or something that they did it as a project. Do you think that looks like me?
A penguin chest.
Get the STL file. We'll have somebody edit it. And
yeah, they can fix it. They can make it more look like me. It looks like Caesar, I think, is what it is. Yeah, chicken Caesar with the dressing. There it is.
Look at that.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? But that's an example. I mean, that's a little sculpture that was done by one of those cornstarch machines.
Very cool.
It's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I would really love it if your listeners got involved because, I mean, your listeners are the smart people, the hackers, the open source fanatics and obsessives like we are. And
you're starting to sound like an Apple commercial.
Here's to the strange ones, the weirdos, the bizarre. Flosses. Yeah, the bizarros.
No, that's true, though. I mean, and these are the kinds of guys that do this kind of stuff. That's really neat. Really neat. I want to do it. If I had more time, there are more hours in the day.
It's just been a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm going to be downloading a lot of videos of all this stuff going on now. I'm going to be like obsessed with this. Now I'm going to have to find somebody nearby who has one. I can't quite afford one myself right now, so I'm going to find somebody who has one near me and going to go play.
When you get it, you don't get it complete. You get it parts, right?
Yeah, you get it in parts. It takes you a weekend to put it together. And we found out that we're still not in a stage where we started selling some completed ones to people, but then it turned out that like, actually making it, you learn how it works so that if it needs adjustment, you know exactly how it works. And part of the gift of getting it is making it and learning exactly how it works. So it's also, if it seems a little expensive for you, one thing that a bunch of people are doing is they're buying it with a few friends and having a weekend and making it, and then they share it. So that's another option for people,
too.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good.
I could, the folks who are in my dead end, we could all have like our own little MakerBot.
MakerBot cul-de-sac? Okay.
Yeah, the MakerBot cul-de-sac. Hey, are you using the MakerBot? I need some measuring spoons. Oh, hold on. I'm finishing the chess set.
I need my steering wheel fixed.
It's so cool. It really is the replicator. It's like the early beginnings of that, especially if you make machines that can build machines.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing is like we're in this really wonderful stage, kind of like when the Apple One first came out, where things are going from mainframe to something you can have yourself on your own desk.
Yeah.
It's that kind of feeling that's getting people excited and that makes me get really excited. Like, this thing doesn't have to be just for elite institutions anymore. You can have one. You can share one with your friends. You can make awesome things happen.
Very.
Hey, when you get that you awesome frosting printer, what are you with other things that are edible? Can you make a brie in brie?
I should have warned you, Brie. He has a kind of strange fetish for bad puns. Don't get him singing like Kermit the Frog.
Not today.
I just think it's really amazing, especially when you look at the commercial versions of these, which cost, you know, 20 times more. I mean, it's really remarkable that you just said, well, let's do it. And over a few months, you actually made an open source 3D printer.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we didn't sleep or anything, so.
And you lived on ramen.
Yeah.
So sacrificed your body for this.
We did. We gave our body and our health to this project.
Science.
We're getting to the place now where we're each getting like 6 or 8 hours of sleep. So it's
that's
nice.
Good.
It's planing off a little bit.
It's just like having any other kind of baby. You don't get much sleep at first.
Yeah.
Now, what is Cupcake CNC versus, is that a MakerBot? What is?
Yeah, so our company is MakerBot Industries, and the Cupcake CNC is a MakerBot. It's we named it the Cupcake CNC because we weren't planning on doing the frosting, and we also knew that if we explained it as like you can make something the size of a really big cupcake or muffin in this machine,
it's a muffin maker.
That would be something tangible in people's heads that they could get to kind of understand the size of things that you can make.
Right. Oh, this is so neat. MakerBot.com. There's a MakerBot store where you can get all the parts you need. And if you go to Thingiverse.com, you can see other people's designs, share them, make them yourself. And Brie, I wish you luck. I think this is a really neat project you're working on. And I thank you.
Hey, thank you. It's been great being on Floss Weekly.
Really neat. Really neat. You could even make floss with...
Oh, yeah, that's easy. We can handle that.
In fact, really, you don't even need the MakerBot. Just take the reel.
Use that spring.
Thank you, Brie.
All right, thanks. We'll catch you later.
All right, bye. Really nice to talk to you. Take care. Oh, he's neat. That is so fun, isn't it, Randall? I mean, I just love.
I would lose every weekend if he lived near me. I would be over there every weekend doing something. I mean, it sounds like he's a really creative guy. Really,
I envy kids today. I mean, look at all the stuff that they have available to them. You know,
toys. You make your own toys. I mean, well, it's like we've actually come full circle, because back in the old days when all you had was like wood and chisels and stuff, and that's all you could make it with, and then we got into this plastic phase where everything's in plastic, and that puts it all in some big factory somewhere that you can't actually do anything with. And this MakerBot and things like it are bringing this back home again, where we can make these plasticine things that we can make from our own, you know, surroundings, which is incredible. It's really sort of re-empowering the individual on this stuff.
It's very exciting.
I wonder if when he made his hovercraft, if it was full of eels. I just was wondering that.
Is that that's some joke item? Sorry, I don't.
It's a Python thing. It's a Python reference. Sorry. Yeah.
Right over my head.
There's four people right now at home that are really laughing.
They're reeling.
And they're making it worse for them. That was really cool. Let's talk about some upcoming guests, because I actually have a couple new bookings that I've just added during the last few hours, even before this taping. So next week, we have Luke Kanes. Oh, he told me how to pronounce it. It's not Kanes, which I said 2 weeks ago. It's Luke Kanes, I think, and Andrew Schaefer of the Puppet Project. This is a project that ensures that you can deploy a bunch of machines that are all similar to each other but slightly different, and have it capture the differences and similarities in a nice, easy scripting language. So very cool project, really going to be handy for those people who have like tons and tons of machines, like school classrooms and things like that, or maybe a build farm or whatever. It's really good for that sort of stuff. I'm actually looking at it because I need to maintain the configuration for the machines I'm putting up in EC2. And I was steered towards it, Amazon EC2, and I was steered towards it as being a possible solution. So we're going to have them on the show, I should say. Following week, Rob Savoy of Ganache, the open source Flash project. Looking forward to that as well. And then Danny O'Brien and Jim Killick on the Open Rights Group. That's the European equivalent, I guess, to the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation. And just added to the schedule, really excited for this, someone who you know, Leo, Mark Pelletier? How do you say his last name? Mark.
Pelletier. Oh, you mean the guy who does the futures in biotech. Yeah.
Exactly. He's going to come on with Edward Seifer to talk about BioPearl, which is the version of Perl that's used for like the Human Genome Project and all this great data processing that's happening within the biology world. And it's going to be great. I was interviewed by him a few months ago for his show, and to bring him on this show, it's really a lot of fun. We're kind of like trading off, but it's all very cool. So we'll have him on the show. And then again, also just added to the schedule, coming up a few weeks later, we've got Matthew Gates, who is the project leader for Stellarium, which is a visualization, basically an astronomy visualization. What do you call those things? Planetarium machine. And they're just about to release a new version. So actually about the time we get him on the show, they're going to talk about this new version they've got coming out. But I played with Stellarium a lot. You know, like anytime I go to a strange place and I look out the window and I go, well, those aren't the stars I'm used to. What stars are they? What time of day is it? And where am I at? Latitude and longitude. And I just type all this in, and it just shows me the entire sky right at the right time, so I can see this cool stuff. So we're going to bring him on as well. I'm also very much I don't have it precisely on the schedule yet, but the guys from the FreeBSD project, the leaders of FreeBSD, which some of you might know out there, have also agreed to be on the show. We're just looking for a final slot for that. So that'll be fun to talk about yet another release of operating systems. We've had a lot of those on recently, but I can never get too many operating systems. That's always the right way to go with that. So lots of great guests coming up. I'm really looking forward to that. If you want announcements about upcoming guests and when I'm doing live streaming and karaoke, you can always follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Merlin with a Y. You can also go to the actual sheet of all the upcoming guests. That would be if you go to twit.tv/floss. You can see the spreadsheet listed there. We have about 195 names on the list right now, a few that we're still looking for email addresses for. So if you see them down towards the bottom of the list, we could use some help with that. There we go with another like I said, Leo, I don't know, maybe we can do Floss Daily. I don't know. This is a lot of energy goes into this, so I don't think we can, but we could for a whole year and still not miss out on it. Speaking of a whole year, we've actually gone almost an entire year without missing a show. I think we missed like one or two in a year, so I've really been pretty good at getting Floss Weekly back to weekly again. It's also another year anniversary that I just wanted to bring up real recently. This is a really bad week for me, apparently, because As I was getting out of a car a couple days ago, I bumped my head on the trunk, the sharp points of the trunk. It hurt my head really bad. And I realized it was 1 year to the day of when I actually broke my arm. So I don't tell you, this is the wrong week of the year for me to be doing anything.
You might want to go to bed this week, just from now on. Just go to bed for the week.
Might have to just get rid of all that stuff. Yeah, that's all I can say. But it's just been so for anybody who's been curious, it's been an entire year now, and my arm is only back to about 40% capacity, and I'm still really annoyed by that. But that's life. That's what happens when you make mistakes. So I fell.
You didn't make a mistake. You fell.
It
could have happened to anybody. Look, I got a cornstarch bust. It could happen to anybody. It's just life. Sometimes life happens. You got a broken wrist. I got a cornstarch bust.
Exactly. So I'm looking forward to next week's show, and to all of our listeners. I hope you're looking forward to that, too. Thank you all very much for listening.
And we'll see you next time
on
Floss Weekly.